everybody wants your insight and opinion, because not only are you the definitive biographer of Anne Shakespeare with your book Imagining Shakespeare's Wife, but you're co-editing the upcoming Palgrave Handbook on Shakespearean Biofiction. So my first question to you is, do we think the film of Hamnet is the Shakespeare in love treatment that Anne Shakespeare deserves?
That's a good question. Yes, I think the novel definitely is.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. I'm Austin Tischner, co-artistic director of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, now in its 20th year, number 991, Hamnet the Movie. Friend of the pod, Catherine Scheil is a professor at the University of Minnesota, the author of Imagining Shakespeare's Wife, The Afterlife of Anne Hathaway, and the co-editor of the upcoming Palgrave Handbook of Shakespearean Biofiction. So she's the perfect person to talk about the film version of Hamnet, Maggie O'Farrell's 2020 novel that imagines the life and, spoiler alert, death of William and Anne Shakespeare's son Hamnet, and how it may or may not have influenced the creation of Shakespeare's greatest tragedy. If you haven't read the novel, you definitely should. And if you haven't yet seen the movie, I think you still definitely should, but with one or two qualifications.
I think the film does a lot of really good things for Anne. So we get to see her as a mother, which is not a very common depiction of her.
And a good mother.
And I've done some work on her epitaph on her grave in Holy Trinity Church. And that's how she's eulogized, is as a beloved mother. So that's obviously how her family wanted to remember her. But we don't really see that much in biofiction at all. I think the film, too, gives us the emotions of motherhood, you know, the grief and the joy. And that we haven't seen in great depth before.
And the quite literal pain of childbirth with, right. I thought Jesse Buckley was absolutely extraordinary.
Right, right. Outstanding.
Yeah.
And there's another podcast here somewhere about the Irish takeover of, of Shakespeare films.
Well, we could talk about the Irish takeover of English literature.
Right, right. So having said all that about, you know, how good the film is and how good Jesse Buckley is, I have to say some of the marketing has just been a real head scratcher.
Interesting.
So I've got a couple details here. So one trailer includes the line, Paul Mescal's emotional period drama is about to take over your fall. Nothing about Anne. Nothing about Jesse Buckley. I think that's... Then the trailer for the film, which I just looked at this morning just to refresh my memory, describes it as the untold love story that inspired Shakespeare's greatest masterpiece, Hamlet, which may be true. But, you know, in the novel and in the film, Hamlet, the play, is only at the very end.
Yeah.
So the idea that this... Yeah, the idea that this is all building up to give us a big reveal about Hamlet, I think is not where the novel was going at all.
One of the things I loved about the novel is that it was sort of the untold love story that inspired all of Shakespeare's women.
Right.
All of Shakespeare's romantic relationships, because their relationship in the novel and to a degree in the movie is loving, passionate, complicated.
Yeah. And we should talk about the changes from the novel and stage play to the film in terms of Shakespeare's infidelity, right? Like, I think that's a big shift.
Yeah, you mentioned that. And it's interesting that I completely forgot about the element of Shakespeare's infidelity in the novel. But what I did feel was that the movie, the second half of the movie, sort of lost its focus on Anne. and yeah. became sort of Shakespeare's movie, which in the novel, it I don't remember that happening.
Right, right. I mean, I think that begs the question, like, how much are we interested in her as her, and how much are we interested in her because of him?
Right.
So I think that shift goes back to, you know, well, is she really only interesting in what she could tell us about his plays or his female characters or his life? Like, is it not really of interest to tell just her story?
Right. Well, and what I loved about the novel, and I got a sense of this in the movie too, especially in the first half, is that he is attracted to her because she has gifts not unlike his own. He has imagination. She has a sort of second sight or a sort of ability to envision futures. She is a creature of the earth. He is a creature of the mind. I want to see William Shakespeare partnered with somebody who is his equal. And I thought the beauty of Maggie O'Farrell's novel was that she became that equal.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And the way she's usually given power in narratives about their relationship is through her sexuality, which only goes so far. You know, so what, you know, what about the elderly Anne? So,
well, her sexual power and her admin skills, you know, running the household. Right.
Right. Right. So I think and she's often shown as like the sexual attraction for Shakespeare. I think one biographer describes the relationship as Shakespeare just sowing his wild oats, you know, so that's the extent of the attraction. Whereas I think you're absolutely right. Like in the novel and the film, she has a gift for this kind of seeing power that, as you say, parallels his artistic gift. And it's something he doesn't have either.
No, he doesn't have. And they both are driven. They're both driven in their own ways to achieve the lives that they have. And they're coming together. They're joining, their physical joining is very powerful and very consensual. And it's not at all how Anne is typically or how they're portrayed as, oh, well, this was either her getting pregnant was either an accident or her entrapping him or him entrapping her. It felt very much of a, no, we're in this together in both the novel and the film, which I appreciate.
Right. Absolutely. And I think one of the amazing things about the novel and the film is that it shows her emotional register equal to his, you know, the grief and the joy. And we see that emotion, and you don't get that very much in biofiction about her.
No, you don't. And I like that. Well, like a lot of men, but also like a lot of writers that I know, he can't articulate his pain, his grief, his emotions verbally or outwardly. He can only channel them into his writing. And that rang true for me as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think you're right, too, about her connection to the earth. I think it was the Rolling Stone review of the film that described her as an earth mother. So she's also got that connection that you could say feeds into his plays with the whole natural world that you see in, you know, Midsummer Night's Dream, probably the best example, but all sorts of others as well.
Right. And I loved how, although, and tell me whether this bothered you, the production of Hamlet that we see at the end did not feel true or accurate to my understanding of the theater where that would have been performed, or the scenery involved, or so that didn't ring true. But I loved how that Will presumably designed the scenery to bring Anne's world onto the stage with him in this story of their lost child.
Don't you see a moment with him there as well, kind of backstage, and he's very poignant, and, you know, he's obviously grieving as well. And then you get to see that emotional moment for him.
Yes. And he's watching her watch
the play. that was, I have to say, that was one of the disappointing things for me about the film was, because it's one of the most exciting parts of the book. She leaves Stratford. She leaves the comfort of the natural world, I suppose, to travel to the big city. And there is suspense. There's danger. There's nervousness about this journey, about where she's leaving her own world to enter Will's world. And there's suspense. It's like the end of a rom-com. She's running to the airport in the rain, you know, to see the opening night of her husband's play. And in the movie, she just shows up in London. Okay.
Right. There's no buildup to that at all. I think we're also missing the whole plague angle that you get in the novel.
Yeah.
You know, so this would have been not only an adventure for her to go to London, although there's the possibility that she lived there with him, right? In the
this is 1590s. newly discovered evidence, right? Tell me about that.
Yeah. So that is the work of Matthew Stegall at University of Bristol, and it's about a letter that we've known has existed for a long time. And it's been transcribed, but no one's really gotten into the detail about it. So it talks about a Mrs. Shakespeare living on Trinity Lane, which was not too far from the Blackfriars Gatehouse, like that section of London. And so Matthew Stegall has done all of this amazing research to basically eliminate all the other possible Shakespeares that could be living in London at the time, and make a case that this Trinity Lane is the one in London and Mrs. Shakespeare is the Anne Shakespeare from Stratford. And, you know, the Mr. is the big guy as well. So it's a revolutionary argument because traditionally, you know, she's always been seen as separated from him with her life back in Stratford, as you said earlier, doing all of the domestic stuff, running the household and such, but living a separate life from his literary world. Yeah. But if she was in London, 1599 to 1603, that's the period of some pretty major plays going on, you know,
including Hamlet.
Yeah. So there are a lot of questions that we need to answer about this. So what was she doing in London at the time? Why was she there? So this would have been after Hamlet's death. So did she leave Stratford in grief, you know, to escape the scenery of Stratford that would have reminded her of her son? Did she bring her daughters with her? I mean, where were the daughters?
I was going to say, where's Judith, the surviving twin? Right. That would had to be painful.
Right. So was the whole family there? That's all left to be discovered. But I think the implications are just fascinating because it brings her into his creative world in a way that she's never had a role in that before, at least like a documentary role.
I'm Peter Holland. I'm the McNeil Family Professor in Shakespeare Studies at the University of Notre Dame, and you're listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast.
Where can you RSC the RSE? This week, we're performing the Ultimate Christmas Show Abridged in Washington State at the Edmonds Center for the Arts tomorrow night, December 3rd, in Olympia Thursday night, December 4th, and next Wednesday, December 10th at the Reiser Center in Beaverton, Oregon, and the Capitol Theater in Yakima next Friday night, December 12th. Sign up for our newsletter or check out the touring page at our website, ReduceShakespeare.com, or our social media pages for venue and ticket information. And now back to my conversation with Professor Catherine Shile, talking about Chloe Zhao's film version of Maggie O'Farrell's novel, Hamnet. In terms of how I understand the evolving understanding of Shakespeare's life as a commuter, a literary commuter between London and Stratford, how he probably didn't go to London for 30 years and then, or 15 or 20 years and then return. He probably went back and forth. In fact, Paul Edmondson from the Shakespeare Birthplace Trust was telling me that the rhythm of the iambic pentameter is sort of like the rhythm of riding on horseback.
Right. Which, right.
Something I'd never considered. Well, of course, as he's riding back to Stratford, he's going ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da.
Right. Like the ultimate commuting writer, multitasker.
100%.
I mean, the other thing about that piece of his life story is, you know, if you think about New Place, right, which he purchased not long after Hamnet's death, the archaeological work has shown that New Place had 20 rooms and 10 fireplaces. So it's not really logical to think that he wouldn't have spent time there.
Right. Why wouldn't you go back? And,
yeah. Why wouldn't you? Right. I mean, anyone who does any kind of creative work, like, would you rather be in rented lodgings in London? Like, there's no evidence he ever lived in a place that he owned in London. Would you rather be in a rented space or out in the countryside in a much bigger structure?
And I did love that detail in the film that they get to his rented flat and it's a garret at the top of a house somewhere. It's not opulent. It's not fancy. Dee was one of Dee's observations was that she wanted to see more of a change in Will, how he's putting on airs. You know, when he comes back to Stratford, maybe he's dressed a little more fancy. He brings her this bauble that I think leads to her understanding that he's had an affair in London. But they don't play with that much. And this was, again, one of the disappointing parts of the film for me is in that second half, Anne became just, in air quotes, a nag, you know?
Yeah.
Where were you? You weren't here. Like Judy Dench's portrayal of Anne Shakespeare in All Is True. Yes, I'm sure she had those feelings, but she wasn't only that aspect of her.
Right. I mean, she must have had some other life, whether it was running a brewing business. You know, that's the other story about New Place, right? So was she, in fact, Lena Orland argues that they were a dual career family, you know, that Shakespeare had his theater career and she was running this brewing business out of New Place. So the idea that, as you say, like all she did was go back to or stay in Stratford and kind of stew in her own anger for the rest of her life. Like it's possible, but it's not a very interesting story.
What did you think about Paul Mescal's Will?
Some Shakespeare scholar, I can't remember who it was, and I should have written this down, said something like, Shakespeare never looked so good. You know? So I think a decent looking Shakespeare, you know, is a good thing for us, at least those who teach Shakespeare, because, you know, more students will think, well, if that's what he looked like, I'm taking this class. You know,
Paul Mescal raised the bar established by Tim Curry and Joseph Fiennes, I suppose.
Right.
I was reminded of the line that Alan Rickman says to Tim Allen in Galaxy Quest. I see you've managed to get your shirt off.
Yeah, that's right. You know, and I think in the trailer or the stills for the film, doesn't he have his sleeves rolled up and that sort of thing? I mean, I have to say, Jesse Buckley is a good looking Anne, though, you know, in contrast to dear Judy Dench, but, you know, a younger Anne that's more, I don't know, vivacious and full of life rather than kind of a soured older woman who's just still pissed off that Shakespeare abandoned her.
Well, I think Judy Dench is old enough to be Ken Branagh's mother, you know, so the age difference between Anne and Will was not that extreme.
Right. 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 I mean, I think the other thing I'd say about the film is that just giving us another visual for Anne, I think, is really important, you know, because there are no illustrations that survive of her. So if you think about the visual Annes that we have, there's Judy Dench, Liza Tarbuck in Upstart Crow. Right. Anne, I think, gets one line in Shakespeare in Love, but she's never depicted.
Right.
So you've got this younger, full of life, visual image of Anne that I don't think we've seen before, at least not to this degree.
Yeah, which is a great summation and brings us back to the beginning of and we haven't talked about the play at all because only people in England have been able to see it so far. But it is coming, the Royal Shakespeare production is coming to Chicago Shakespeare in March or April, I think. So be able to see it. I'll be able to see it then. But you've seen both. How does the film compare to the stage adaptation of the novel?
Boy, that's a good question. I think the stage adaptation is probably the weakest of the three, you know, between the novel, stage adaptation, and the film, because it's very linear. So probably remember in the novel, you know, the time goes back and forth, and that doesn't happen so much in the film, but I think the film can fill in visuals and kind of a broader landscape of the story that the stage play really didn't do. I think the one advantage of the stage play, though, is the emotion that you get from Anne or Agnes when you're physically there in the theater, like at the death of Hamnet, like that was incredible. Also being in a theater with a couple of hundred other people physically in that moment, that you don't get in the novel or in the film. So that just that moment right there is worth seeing the play alone, I think.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Comedy Podcast, except for one more thing, which I'll share with you in about 60 seconds, so stick around. Catherine Schild's biography, Imagining Shakespeare's Wife, The Afterlife of Anne Hathaway, is available wherever books are sold, and Chloe Zhao's film version of Maggie O'Farrell's novel Hamnet opens wide this week, so check, as they say, your local listings. Send us your sexy Shakespeares via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com, or throw a comment to us over on the socials or on our own actual website, reducedshakespeare.com, or visit my website, theshakespeareans.com. Thanks, as always, to Son of a Glover, Matthew Croak, web services by Ginger Power Limited, music by John Weber and Garage Band. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Christopher Owen. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Peter Holland, outgoing professor of Shakespeare at the University of Notre Dame and chair of the International Shakespeare Association. And as always, thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 991 2973rds of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
I think the film doesn't market itself so much as a film of the novel, but rather a film that tells us the story of Shakespeare's Hamlet. When I saw the film last month here in Minneapolis, when I was walking out, I heard an audience member say, "I had no idea Shakespeare was married and had kids." So I think, you know, the film is doing some groundwork for us, you know, kind of helping with Anne's story for sure.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.